The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network. Greetings, scribes. I have got some exciting news to share. The Writer Files now has an exclusive Patreon community where subscribers will get exclusive access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and content from productivity and publishing experts each month. In the meantime, just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles. It's free to join Patreon to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something special.
My relationship with writing is a private one. It's just something that I do every day. It's almost religious for me. I'm very, very passionate about getting that time in daily to, you know, touch base with myself. Some people meditate, some people do yoga. I write.
Greetings, scribes. Welcome back to The Writer Files. I am still your humble host, Kelton Reed, sending you positivity and prolificness per usual. And this week, celebrated designer, creative director of Scribe Media, and author, Erin Tyler, spoke with me about how she overcame childhood trauma to become one of the industry's best book cover designers, why this is such an important time in publishing, and book cover fails to beware of. Over her 20-year career, Erin has designed book covers for multiple New York Times bestselling authors, including James Altucher, Ryan Holiday, David Goggins, and Tucker Max. As creative director of Scribe Media, she now helps manage and support the best book cover designers in the game to create unforgettable covers for authors. Erin recently illustrated and published her own memoir, The Bad One, a memoir about growing up a goat, short for scapegoat, the story of her traumatic childhood. In this file, Erin and I discussed her cathartic journey from designer to author, the glut of creative tools now available to writers, why competitive title research is so crucial to the look of your book, the visual math and emotional haiku that go into a great cover, recent industry trends that get under her skin, and why you should feel free to over-communicate but not micromanage with your book cover designer. Stay safe and stay sane out there. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click subscribe to automatically see new interviews as soon as they're published, and leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts to help other writers find us. And we are back on The Writer Files. I am honored today to be joined by a special guest. We have a celebrated book cover designer and author, Erin Tyler. How are you surviving this pandemic that we're all dealing with?
I was quite surprised to find out what an extrovert I am. I went into it thinking I was, you know, going to be just fine. I'm an introvert. Oh, hell no. Hell no. I love my people. I love my hugs and all of that. So I'm definitely struggling.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been hard for a lot of us, obviously. I think, it's interesting talking to so many, authors just about like how it's changed their lives. And I think, you know, as writers who tend to be, you know, tend to work very in a very solitudinous state of mind for the most part. Yeah, everyone's kind of lamenting not being able to go to a coffee shop and edit, or you know, get out and have a drink with a friend.
Yeah, I'm predicting a wave of books and movies and TV shows about just the despair of loneliness. Kind of sits around and stews in their sadness because they're not getting that social energy.
For sure. For sure. I think, you know, the movies that I keep hearing about that are considered timely are all about, you know, kind of like existential dread or, anxiety and fear. And of course we don't need more of that in the world, but that's not why we're here. Yeah, I want to talk to you about all the things, and I want to talk to you about your writing, your artwork, your book cover design expertise. So let's talk about your superhero origin story, you know, and maybe talk a little bit about how writing has affected your life, how it's become a big part of your life, and then, kind of the genesis of not only your career as both a celebrated book cover designer, but also as an author, kind of your the Cliff's Notes of how you got here.
Yeah, that's a pretty extreme dramatic story. And I don't come from a extreme dramatic family. I come from a really nice family, just a regular middle class family. And had parents who were really stressed out from their own childhood trauma, and they were just sort of in a daze when they had my sister and me. And I came out super duper sensitive. And I came out super empathic, and I ended up being what's called the scapegoat child of the family. And that is the kid that is sort of the designated trash heap of the family. And what happens is that ends up being the kid that everybody kind of blames for any of their problems. Mm-hmm. And they're sort of identified as the outsider in the family, and they're identified as, the cause of everyone's troubles, so that everyone can feel, pulled together and whole and more sort of like a team. It's a very common phenomenon. It's pretty much just a family archetype these days in America. It's, incredibly common to have parents who are struggling with, their own narcissism and narcissistic features. And, it's kind of a byproduct of that when you can't really admit that things aren't going perfectly for you. And, when you don't feel great about yourself, that's a very difficult thing to admit. There just has to be something around that is the cause of the problems. It can't be you, because that just hurts too much. And so it's their sort of creative way of maintaining wholeness and maintaining great feelings about themselves. But if you are that kid, it can be really, really troubling. You can, identify as being, broken or bad. You internalize a lot of really negative self-talk and a lot of negative ways of thinking about yourself. And, if you're extremely sensitive, and I was, still am, if you're extremely sensitive and you are extremely empathic and, and you got that sensitivity, it can be disastrous. It can be, life ruining, essentially.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting that you bring this up now, and this is probably a very timely subject, but I imagine that there are lots of young people right now that are going through this very moment in history, this very challenging time in history for all of these, many, many families all over the world. We often talk about these kind of concentric circles of crises that we're all facing. But, there's just like so much to be kind of hopeful for, of course, but obviously there are kids probably suffering from this very, very phenomenon, that are thinking, gosh, like, how, what am I going to do? My parents are struggling with this, financial and all of these health crises and it probably worse than ever for them.
Yeah. And, I think that was probably the reason why I needed to publish so badly. Writing has been a passion of mine for a long time. I used writing as a means of sort of regaining my story, kind of stripping away the gaslighting and really sort of examining who I was as a person and cleaning all of that up. It was an incredibly powerful tool for transformation for me. I think kids are extremely plastic. Kids can be anything. Kids can be anything they're told, whether it's good, bad, or otherwise. And kids need to grow up and learn that their story is theirs. How they feel about themselves is completely within their power. And it is, it is them who makes them. It is no one else.
Yeah. So you wrote this memoir, The Bad One, and you illustrated it too beautifully. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's got to feel pretty good getting that out to the world, given your storied career as a book cover designer, and obviously you've got a passion for art and yeah, talk about how you kind of integrated the two to put together this beautiful book, and then just talk a little bit about the message that you want people to take away from The Bad One. The subtitle is a memoir about growing up a goat, as you mentioned before.
Not the good kind of goat.
No.
The bad kind of goat.
Not the greatest of all time. Not no. LeBron.
You know, I mean, I didn't even think about that when I chose the subtitle, and then everybody made fun of me at Scribe.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, my story with writing is, you know, I grew up, it was a hard childhood, and I came out of it suicidal. And I attempted suicide at the age of 21 because I just could not live another day as myself. And my uncle, 6 or 7 months later, actually, he killed himself. And, you know, my narrative growing up had always been, oh, God, I'm so bad. I'm so bad. I'm awful and I'm crazy. And my poor parents, my poor, perfect family, you know, if only it were for me, you know, this is sort of the story that I internalized. Fake story, but that's what I got. And that's what I ate. And that's what sustained me. And so I went to my uncle's funeral kind of, you know, like I couldn't help but kind of imagine, you know, what if, you know, it was me in that coffin, because I had just attempted suicide. And, you know, for the first time in my entire life, I actually thought to myself, well, shit, maybe the problem isn't me. Maybe, you know, there's something wrong with this family. And when I had that thought, I had this, you know, this very powerful feeling in my gut, like, yeah, 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 let's, you know, let's follow that. Let's see where that goes. That feels so good to say, even if it's just this private little thought to ourselves. And that night I went home and I picked up a pen and a pad and I started writing and I never stopped. And so my relationship with writing is a private one. It's just something that I do every day. It's almost religious for me. I'm very, very passionate about getting that time in daily to, you know, touch base with myself. Some people meditate, some people do yoga. I write, and writing and journaling, like I said, has been, you know, the ultimate tool for transformation mm-hmm. for me. And so that's where the writing started. And, you know, I got into publishing kind of accidentally. I had a friend who published and he really hated the book covers that were coming his way from the art department. And he said, can you help me? And I said, sure. And that is kind of how I started as a book cover designer. And, you know, I quickly realized that it's like one of the most difficult things that you can do in design because it's doing something different. You know, you're doing something different every single morning. You know, a different look, a different style, different type, different everything. And so it's terrifying because you're not resting on your laurels. You're not resting on a brand. There's never a brand that you can, you know, fall back on because you're inventing something new every single time you start a project with an author. And yeah. I just found that terrifying and so exciting at the same time. Like, okay, maybe I can try this. You know, what if we try, you know, something completely radical and different tomorrow? And I just fell in love with it. And I still love it so much. I just think it's the most incredible job.
And just a quick aside to revisit the exclusive Writer Files Patreon community, where subscribers get access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and a lot more. I know that for serious writers, it can be more distracting than ever to cut through the noise, stay productive, and home in on what's happening in the publishing industry. Over 8 years, we've provided a looking glass into the habits of professional writers and publishing industry insiders. And as your humble host, I've decided to launch a membership-based Patreon for serious scribes to cut through the noise, swap tips and tricks, and hang out with like-minded peers. Just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles for bonus writing resources, monthly episode breakdowns, writer's happy hour, a community of your peers, ad-free episodes, and more. It's free to join to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something cool and special. Keep calm and write on. So yeah, let's talk about, I mean, as the creative director of Scribe Media, that's been described as kind of a paradigm shifting publishing company, talk a little bit about, kind of your view of, you know, as you described, it's a very difficult type of design, but like kind of how you see, maybe the industry right now, between, and obviously something like a hybrid publishing company versus, you know, like independent or self-published authors going through this process of trying to find a book cover designer, you know, kind of what are you seeing? What are some trends that are kind of sticking out, and kind of what is your role currently in at Scribe Media to kind of help drive the industry?
Yeah. Oh God, it's such an exciting time to be alive. It's like so exciting. If you're someone who is an artist, or you're not, maybe you're not an artist, maybe you just want to publish. I mean, you have more tools, you know, to publish and to be creative and to put your voice out there and to brand yourself and to do all these incredible things than ever. And I just think this is just the most exciting time for publishing. It's also, you know, I mean, it's a little bit scary because you're doing everything on your own, right? So, you know, there are, I'll tell you, you know, I'll essentially tell you what we do at Scribe. We have a very sort of different way of looking at the publishing process. Most of the people who come through our doors have never published a book before. They tend to be extremely experienced. They tend to be extremely professional. They absolutely are experts within their field, and they absolutely have relevant things to say. But, you know, they tend to be people who are very interested in being meaningful and memorable. And so what we do at Scribe in our book cover department is we deeply, deeply consider the genre that people publish within, and then we counter signal within that genre. So for us, before we go down the road of even writing up a creative brief, we do extensive competitive title research. And I would recommend anyone who's considering publishing on their own, self-publishing, do extensive competitive title research within your genre so that you can look and see what's already out there within that genre. And you want to do that because you want to sort of fit in professionally, as if to say, like, I belong here. But you want to stand out and you want to be memorable within that genre. You want to be that one cover that everybody looks at and says, oh, that's a little different and that's interesting. And I'm going to store that in my brain, and you know, that's going to hang out there, and that way you're going to be memorable.
Yeah. I like that a lot. And yeah, I mean, there is a subtle psychology to it. Is there not?
Yeah. Yeah. It is. You know, I mean, a lot of it is just an Occam's razor approach to visuals. You know, I tell people, you know, your grandmother was so right. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but literally everyone does, and they always will. And there's nothing that can be done about that. So might as well use that to your advantage. You know, color is powerful. Images, shapes, powerful. You know, I mean, all of these primal things that we pick up, you know, in our infancy, they are tied to emotions within us. And, you know, when we use color intelligently, we can suggest an array of emotions and feelings and meanings that may pop up within a manuscript. And so, you know, when we endeavor to make a cover, what we're really trying to do is kind of try to make almost an emotional kind of haiku of your manuscripts, you know, which is why it's so difficult. It's, you know, it's this terrifying, you know, condensing of, you know, an 88,000 word manuscript into shape and color, right? I mean, that's incredibly difficult. But if it's done successfully, that's what it really should be. You know, a portrait of what you're saying, the essence of what you're saying in color and shape and form. And the meaning should be within the viewer almost immediately. Immediately, they should have a sense of what's going on. They should have a sense of who you are stylistically, and they should absolutely feel something. You know, it should be evocative or provocative. It should make them want to know more.
Yeah, that's interesting. I love the phrase emotional haiku. Going to use that one more often. But I want to pick your brain about maybe some trends that you're seeing that you do not like in book cover design.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's specific to the usage, right? So, you know, I mean, there's definite trends that I see that I think, you know, I'm not a fan of. I'm not, a huge fan of, you know, what I would call probably lazy typography, seeing, you know, someone use an author title, a title, and a subtitle kind of unintelligently all at the same size, and then putting a whole lot of crap around it. And I hear this is a wonderful book. I've heard it is just stupendous and marvelous, but an example of that would be kind of Glennon Doyle, Untamed by Glennon Doyle. And yeah, I mean, it's wild and it's crazy and there's a lot going on and it's super, amazing, but you know, just from my perspective, the type is kind of lazy and, it's not as meaningful as it could be. And I would say, you know, I mean, that's something that you should really think about when you meet with your designer is, you know, covers that you're inspired by. Hey, if you like that look and you like that book, you know, gather it, collect it, show it to your designer and say, this is what inspires me. I like this one and I like that one. And, be sure to, you know, I mean, over communicate, if anything, you know, mm-hmm. look around and it doesn't even have to be covers. It could be, you know, maybe you're a huge fan of Apple, you know, the way that Apple designs, and maybe, you really like minimalism. Maybe, you know, you like Art Nouveau, you know, think about what it is that is deeply meaningful to you and gather it all together and be sure to, like, if anything, over communicate with your designer about who you are stylistically, because, you know, even if, you know, Glennon Doyle's Untamed is your, you know, favorite cover, your designer's not going to want to give you that exact cover. They're going to want to use that as a style reference to make, you know, a portrait of you using, you know, something wild and those kind of fonts. And they're going to want to give you something that's meaningful and specific to you.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the research piece, which obviously seems like a no-brainer for whatever genre you're publishing in, right? And then, as you mentioned, over communicating who you are stylistically. I recommend using the phrase emotional haiku when you go into a book designer meeting. But yeah, so would you bring then images or examples of typography, or would you let the designer kind of do the typography piece, or, you know, how do you make suggestions without seeming like you're micromanaging your book designer?
Yeah, I would say micromanaging is a big no-no. You know, typography is only slightly subjective. It's essentially visual math, and you don't know it. You don't know that math. And, you know, I mean, if you haven't been working in that math, you know, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for at least 5 years, you don't know that math. So don't micromanage the type. Yeah. Keep your hands off the type, because, you know, the tweaks that you're making, they're sucking all the power out of the book. Your typesetter is going to do everything they can to make you look professional. So, you know, don't get in their way. I would say, though, you know, if you like a certain, you know, typography style, you know, pull references and examples of everything that you like and give them to your designer. You know, a good designer, you know, if you're, you know, publishing a business book and it's about being bold and it's about, you know, taking chances and taking risks, and you take a memoir cover to your designer and the type is really little and it's super, you know, serif-y or organic fonts, any designer worth a damn is going to say, hey, we can't use this type. This is not for business books. You want to be big and you want to be bold and all of that. And this type is very sort of minimal. And this is all about negative space and this is not going to work. So your designer should be able to guide you, but definitely let them know what it is that you like and you're drawn to. You know, mm-hmm. that communication is absolutely crucial.
And, you know, in a book design, usually I think initially it comes in a few phases, right? Because your designer is trying to get a feel for that emotional haiku, obviously. But it's not set in stone right away, right? There's going to be a couple rounds of creative discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What we usually do is we do a kickoff call where, you know, we sort of hash out, you know, stylistically what it is you're drawn to. I always tell people to give me a deep, passionate elevator pitch of their book and their content. And then I go skim through the manuscript because I just really like to know what's going on in the book, because tone is it'll inform style so, so heavily. Hmm. And what we do at that point is we put together a creative brief. We do that competitive title research, you know, and we sort of figure out where it is that we want to situate you stylistically within your genre, so that you do stand out and you're memorable, but you look professional. And then, you know, we throw spaghetti at the wall. That's essentially what it is. We do a whole lot of image research and, you know, we look at illustration, you know, is this an illustrative solution? Is this something where we're, you know, doing, you know, photo composition, or is this something that is type based, you know, and we just bang out those comps, just comp. And, you know, be patient with your designer, because that first round of looks that you're going to see, that's going to be where all of the hard work is. The refinement phase towards the end of the process, you know, that's the easier stuff. You know, hey, let's try this font. Let's maybe, you know, pump up the subtitle. Let's, you know, change the color a little bit. You know, that stuff is easy. So don't be frustrated if your designer goes away and they're gone for a month, you know, just sort of deeply considering what it is that your book is saying in visual form.
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest difference between fiction and nonfiction covers? Is there a marked kind of divide there?
I mean, I think it would depend on the genre, right? So I think there are examples of covers that are nonfiction that are stylistically pretty close to fiction. I think it definitely depends on the genre. So, you know, biz books would be one end of the spectrum completely. They're bold, lots of color. They tend to be quite minimal. They tend to be, you know, just clean, bold design. Fiction tends to be a richer look. It tends to be more emotional, more photo use. You're not going to see a whole lot of photography use on biz books. It's going to be pretty minimal if it is there. So it definitely depends on the genre. I would say, you know, the intellectual biz book, nonfiction, would probably be closer to fiction. But also, you know, I mean, when we think about genres, I think that can be kind of like thinking about pathologies. You know, it's so important to not kind of be reductive, because then you're kind of pigeonholing yourself into, you know, just one way of doing things, right? You know, so when, you know, $100 startup, that's a great, great cover, right? That's not a very biz book kind of cover. That was a little bit different, a little bit crazy. Ray Dalio's Principles, that's kind of, you know, that was a little bit different. I think if we had thought sort of ordinarily about that graphic problem, we probably would have done, you know, a much bigger, much bolder kind of shoe dog look, you know, with, you know, giant title and giant fonts. And, you know, that's not, you know, Principles is a really great cover because it utilizes that kind of, you know, the black and the white and the negative space, and it's quite classic.
Yeah. What's one of your favorites that you've designed in your career or even more recently?
Oh, goodness. Probably David Goggins. He was just such a joy to work for. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with David Goggins?
I am, actually. And Adam Skolnick, who ghost wrote the his book, is actually one of my best friends.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh,
cool. And he's been on this show dozens of times. So we always kind of joke around. But he and David are working together very well.
That's awesome. Yeah. David, I had kind of no knowledge of him before taking the call. And someone said, well, gosh, you got to research David Goggins. He's amazing. So, you know, I pulled up his podcasts and I started reading about him, and he's a tough dude. I have to say, I was a little bit terrified to take that call. I was kind of shaking in my boots, and I really don't get that way anymore. But yeah, I got on the call with him, and he said, listen, you are the expert. I will follow you into the fire. You are going to take me home. And he like got me so motivated that like I hung up the phone and I started doing push-ups. It was amazing. And he just, you know, he basically just inspired the crap out of me and then hung back and waited for me to show up with good work. And it was just such a great experience working for him.
Yeah. Well, that is a great one. And, the book itself is also, his story is very inspiring. And,
He's amazing.
It's an incredible, incredible story. I'm sure we'll be hearing more from David, but, yeah, before we sign off here, you know, I guess maybe one question I would throw at you, if you have time, is just, you know, how much time should authors give a book designer to really do the job the way it needs to be done? I mean, well, obviously.
Yeah. I would say that if after, you know, two rounds of back and forth, you feel as if you're not being listened to, it might be time to look at going to another designer. Most designers, if you get into that first round and you're doing a feedback and, you know, and be honest, please be honest. This is your baby, right? This is your life's work. So, you know, be very honest with your designer. You know, designers and professionals, we can handle it. We're not going to break down. If you got that round back and it's just nowhere in the ballpark of what you wanted, and you take the time to sort of touch base and get the tone right, and then they come back and you still feel like you're not being listened to, it's time to pull the plug and move elsewhere. Because it is so incredibly important, that listening. And if you feel as if you're not being listened to, then you're probably not going to get the result that you want.
Well, this advice has been really, really priceless. So I want to point one last time at your home base there, which is AaronTylerDesign.com, right?
Uh-huh.
And listeners can find more about Aaron, get in touch, check out a link to The Bad One there, a memoir about growing up a goat. I'll link to the book. I'll link to your home base there. I see that you're on Twitter under the handle @BunnyBlog.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. I used to have a crazy, crazy blog back in the day called The Bunny Blog.
Well, we'll link to all those places. Is there anywhere else you want to connect with listeners before we sign off with any advice you have for your fellow scribes?
Yeah, man. Scribe Media. Go to Scribe Media. Yeah. Greatest, smartest people I've ever met.
Fantastic. We will link to Scribe Media, and Aaron and the team are doing a fantastic job over there. Congratulations on all your successes. What nugget of advice do you want to leave for your fellow scribes on just how to persevere and keep going and keep the ink flowing?
Yeah, I would say be true to yourself. Be true to yourself.
I like that. Be true to yourself squared. And we will leave it at that. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this, and definitely come back another time and wrap with us about all things writing and publishing.
I would love to. This has been a total pleasure.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of The Writer Files. And if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating or a review to help other writers out there find us. You can always leave a comment or a question and visit the entire archives at writerfiles.fm. And you can chat with me on Twitter @KeltonReed. Cheers. Talk to you next week.